a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. Oh, man, I tell you, I had a little frog in my throat. That humble host. Let me get a little drink here. Oh, coffee heals everything. Rock me, Panama. Carmen Estate washed. All right, so episode 250. Da-da! I mean, I need to get Jennifer to put like some special effects in there or something like. Jennifer, can we do that now? Here, we're just gonna do this live. Okay, you ready? 250. Da-da! How amazing would that be? I guess probably the all special effects I'm gonna get. All right, so for episode 250, we have a special treat, ladies and gentlemen. Are you ready? No, not that special treat. Not Chris special treat Stefanik, a different special treat. Just a special treat, not special treat per se, just a special treat. Please welcome to the counter position, the lovely and talented Natalie Scott.
Yes, thank you. I'm super excited to be here.
So Natalie has a project called the Ezer Project, Aitzer Project.
We were just talking about that, about
how rednecks say it.
Yeah, rednecks. Rednecks would say it was Ezer, but the Hebrew is Aitzer.
I don't know if it's rednecks. I mean, I am a redneck.
Do you know the real reason why we named the ministry the Ezer Project?
No idea.
Besides the incredibly deep meaning that this Hebrew word really has, which I love the meaning, but the domain was open.
The domain was open.
Yeah.
That really matters these days.
Do you know what? There was nobody else was using this name.
You had a list of possible names and you just went through and put .com.
Jumping on it. Ultimately, it does have beautiful meaning. It means help in Hebrew, all help. This about partnering and such, but gorgeous meaning. But no, so
you know, what's the Greek word for help? I can't remember it right now, but there's a place, I think it's in First John, where he says that the Spirit helpeth our infirmities in the King James. But I remember hearing a preacher one time explain the Greek there, that the word means take hold against together with. So think about that. Like, you know, you're going to help someone move a couch.
Yeah.
You take hold against the burden of the couch together with the other person. So help means take hold against together with.
That's so interesting. Well, I love etymology and I've worked a lot with teens before and told them, you know, if you want to get a better grade in your papers, you should use the word etymology and get into the deep meaning behind words. And
now we have to be careful because this radio show has a drinking game attached to it.
you should have warned me.
I am the only Catholic radio show with a drinking game for every episode.
Okay.
It's kind of life. I like the Buffy the Vampire Slayer drinking game they used to have. I mean, like anytime you listen to the counterposition, there are people who play the drinking game. And it's like anytime I say the word Justin Schneer, okay, I'm exempting everyone from drinking because I'm going to list the rules.
I don't even know why would you want to say Justin Schneer.
No, Justin Schneer. He's my best friend in California.
Oh, I see.
And so when I say his name, you have to drink.
Okay. Well, do you know why? Somebody's getting plastered right now.
I exempted them while explaining the rules.
All right.
And then because I'm such a redneck, even though I'm a fairly sophisticated, highly educated redneck, If this is why etymology can get ugly, because one of the rules is if I use a big $5 word, a pedantic turn of phrase or Latin, but then make a basic grammar mistake in the exact same sentence, you have to drink. Because it happens fairly often.
Oh, got it.
Yeah.
All right.
If I say the phrase mode of engagement, you have to drink because I do that too much. But let's see what I'm trying to think of. What else are the rules? I had like eight. I don't remember. Oh, if I tell a story that I clearly do not realize I'm retelling that I've told in the last 10 episodes and everyone is listening going, he just talked about that. You have to drink because all the things that I'm prone to do, I make you drink on my show.
All right. My goodness, it just opens up so you can things you know just pierce should. A little bit more deeply. You can
maybe for episode 300, I'll get all of my favorite guests together and we will play the drinking game
that
while we're recording.
Sounds fantastic.
And that can get ugly by the end of the episode. Oh, hey. This, me and this, I keep my
having problems with the microphone here.
This mic stand started dripping. I keep forgetting to bring a screwdriver here and fix this thing. And so it keeps falling apart on me.
Having a little technical difficulties here.
Just talk amongst yourselves. I'll give you a topic. The Industrial Revolution.
Or drink.
Industrial Nora Revolution.
This could be drinking rule number it's like coffee nine.
Talk. Coffee talk.
Oh, okay.
There's the mic slips. The new, if I have technical difficulties with my mic stand, you have to drink.
My word. Of course, we do believe in moderation and that this is, so these might, so they might have to.
You have to drink or how strong it is or how big the drink has to be. You can just take a sip. We're not doing.
Oh.
Though I think the people that listen to my show, most of them are going to be doing tequila shots. And
well, that's what I was going to think back when we in college when we played Battleship beer pong, but did it with whiskey instead of beer. And so just, so I think it's important.
I liked Natalie.
Important that you.
I would have met fun Natalie.
But yes.
All right. Well, we're not gonna play.
Listen, we don't need to go back to those memories.
All right. So, and we're getting back to the Ezra project, the Aitzer project. So what is that?
The etymology?
No. What is the project?
No. Okay. Well, we're ministering to Catholic lay ministers.
What's a lay minister?
Nobody knows what a lay minister is, which is one of the reasons that we wanted to start this project. Essentially, a normal person like me,
might be slightly debatable.
Darn it. This is true. Well, somebody who's not a nun, somebody who's not a religious sister or a priest, but somebody who has devoted their life to serving the church, either as a professional or as a volunteer, would be qualified as a lay minister.
Okay. And so these are people in the church that are not, they're not priests, they're not nuns. But they're doing stuff. They're working on some kind of ministry. They're helping us with our spiritual life in some way. They're running projects.
And it runs a whole gamut.
Everything from soup kitchens to spiritual direction and stuff.
Yeah, all over the place. Pretty much everybody. My heart really goes out to youth ministers and young adult ministers because that's what I've spent a lot of time doing as well.
Why in the world do youth ministers need help for? I mean, they're incredibly appreciated. They're absolutely overpaid. They're just, I mean, everyone reveres them and takes them incredibly seriously. And every church I know puts youth ministry as the absolutely most important thing in a church.
It's not that you're being sarcastic.
I'm being mean. The truth is like the opposite of that.
Well, and here's where I think it's very important to be political and careful about how the church is treating her lay ministers right now, is that we have the bulk of the work is done by lay ministers in the church. And there are some real heroes out there. There's some real heroes who are making huge, huge sacrifices. But also, too, is that one of the things I want to do is start telling those stories about what are they doing? What are the responsibilities that they have and the sacrifices that people are making in order to go and change lives? I mean, there's some people doing incredible things and we don't talk about it very often. And we need to know how can we start supporting them so they can continue doing amazing things to help people.
What I think is funny, it's like, everybody from Whitney Houston to whoever you talk to on the street is going to tell you that the children are the future, right? You know, I believe the children are the future. And so we are all the children. And it's like, anytime you want to get a political point, what, you don't care about the kids? What about the children? Oh, you know, it's for the children. You know, you want to raise money. Look at this starving child, the children. So you would think that people are like, oh, no, we're going to give the best to the children. And then it's like, okay, here's what we're going to pay our school teachers. Or here's what we're going to pay the people that are leading our children into some kind of a spiritual life.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I have friends that are teachers. In like they're elementary teachers, and I'm like, I look at what they're making, especially like in the church, and I'm like, well, how in the world does this translate from what we value to how we're treating these people?
Well, you know? The hard thing is that there are so many good people who recognize that that teens just aren't the future of the church.
Right.
They are the church today. And being present to them and helping them through some really, kids are going through some really rough stuff today.
I absolutely cannot comprehend what it would be like to be a teenager today.
I can't either. I literally, even, in college, Facebook started sophomore year is like when it really started catching on. I didn't even have Facebook really until I was a junior in college. I missed by a couple years the whole social media uproar and upheaval. I had one person in high school who had a cell phone. It was for emergency only, a friend. And just even that simple, I'm not that old, but right. being able to relate to the culture that teens are experiencing with the online harassment and the bullying and the things that they're exposed to, the pornography, all these. I mean, it's just these kids are dealing with things that and the struggle is so evident.
I
thought
I had stress at high school, but I mean, some kid is worried about how he's going to be ostracized because his Instagram photo didn't get enough likes or shares.
He
goes and he can just look at hot and cold running pornography to deal with that stress. It's just,
and if, do you know what? But at the same time too, I just think teens are funny, amazing, smart people. Like they bring so much joy into my life.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And being able to just walk alongside teenagers as they're continuing to struggle. But also the hope that they're bringing, right. the excitement that they do have for the future is wonderful. I think they're worth investing in. But what you were talking about, why aren't we investing more?
You know, speaking of investing in things, we have to go sell some ads.
So we're coming to the end of the break, so we'll talk
about
it. All right, so you're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll be right back.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. The only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, and we are here with Natalie Scott of the Ezra Project.
And I just think we've discovered drinking rule number 10,
which
is super abrupt transitions into breaks.
Hey, wait, I think we just like I told her during the break, I'm like, I am so bad at this. Like my listeners are so used to me going, oh, wait, break, gotta go, bye. You know, it's like I just get going and I don't pay attention. So you keep looking at Touchdown Jesus. You like him over there?
Do you know what? I don't know if you've ever described the environment that you're posting into your
it's
audience.
It's way too depressing. I do describe the location. I am in a bunker under a center of the new evangelization, nestled somewhere hidden in the Rockies, not unlike NORAD, is what I always say. But I am in like a empty office space with this is my radio, what do you call it, the sukkot or whatever, like my booth, like the Feast of Booths. I've got my little fake.
Great soundproofing.
I got my studio set up. But in this room, there's a few like little things being stored in this room. One of them is a giant, they call it the Resurrection Jesus. It's we call him Lovingly Touchdown Jesus.
Yeah, he's lying over here covered in this blanket, and you can just see his arms poking up out of it.
We have an extra statue laying around.
It's great.
It was in the storage room, but when they were moving a bunch of stuff, they didn't want it to break, so they put it in here, and it's never made it back. Yep. So
my attention keeps going from Andrew to Touchdown Cheeses to Andrew to the hands.
Late 60s Mary statue, too. But we've
it's
got.
Great.
But yeah, there's a Jesus, and he's got both hands up, and every time I see him, I think, it's good. Touchdown Jesus. Or it's field goal Jesus. It's good, you know?
Yeah.
So that's it's a pretty, and there's like depressing fluorescent light.
Well, too. Talking about, because we were just talking about investing in teens, it does remind me of this time when I was working with a group up in Minnesota, and there's this thing about youth group rooms, which one they have to, when you're developing a youth ministry room devoted to teenagers, you have to proof this and teenage proof it, because there's going to be things thrown around. They're going to be jumping up and down on the couches. This should be a safe place for them to really have fun. But somebody, a major donor to that particular parish, had got it into their head that they were a wonderful artist, and that they managed to carve probably the most hideous statue of the prodigal son and the father. And because the church didn't want to put it anywhere, they're like, oh, we'll put it in the youth room because it'll be a great source of inspiration to the teens. But because it hadn't been teen proofed, one of its arms got knocked off. We would take that arm and just put it up in all of different places, stroke people's faces with it. So Touchdown Jesus with his arms is bringing me flashbacks to that, because when we are investing in youth, sometimes often youth do get just the knockoffs that the parish doesn't want, right. Being like, oh, the teens won't care. And that's just one of the many things that I believe very strongly.
I'm gonna hang Touchdown Jesus on that wall over there. Just like, wouldn't that be great? You walk in and it's just like, there's this cheesy 70s statue. It's like, it's good. You know, like, I put a big speech balloon saying like, it's good, you know, but it's like with the creation, it's like, you know, God made all creation, and he looked at it and he said that it's good. You know, it'd be like, we thought that meant that he approved of it, he was literally going, it's good. Like it's in between the goals, you know what I mean? All right. So back, getting off of Touchdown Jesus or Field Goal Jesus, back to youth ministry. It's interesting, or just lay ministry in general. So yeah. I think a lot of people, unless you're like a full-on baby boomer, you don't really remember this. But at one point, everything was done by a collar or a nun. Everything was done by priests or brothers or sisters or nuns. And so when you went to Catholic school, you were taught by priests and nuns.
We've been operating on a celibate model of service in the church for generations, centuries, not just generations, centuries.
Maybe millennia. I mean, that's why we used to be able to take over the world, is we had all the land. So we had all the money. We were the only ones making culture, and we had an ocean of people with a vow of poverty and a vow of celibacy to do the work.
It's true. Well, here's one of the things that has really struck me when I was trying to break down some stats, was realizing that here in America, there's 12,587 Americans for every one Catholic priest. And lot of people, 12,587 as back when I broke down the numbers in September.
So 12.5.
It is. And do you know what really struck me about that was just thinking, you know, it is physically impossible for our priest to be present to so many people. And I know a lot of people have had, have not had good encounters sometimes with their priests or with religious sisters. Honestly, their job descriptions are so huge. So I know so many good priests. I know some priests who are not so great either, but I do know the ones who actually would want to sit down and take time with you and invest with you are so overwhelmed and overstretched. And so how do they start reaching out to more people? They need to start partnering with lay ministers, with people who would be able to sit down and be able to answer your questions and be able to help people in those difficult situations when there's a single mom who needs help moving. Like, you know, you most likely are going to encounter somebody sitting in the pews or somebody who's helping to coordinate those efforts of those people in order to encounter that beautiful love of our Lord. And that's going to be lay ministers.
Right. Well, and so at the Second Vatican Council, you know, this kind of this universal call to holiness came. It was like this idea that before the Second Vatican Council, there wasn't really too much going on with lay ministers, because there was kind of this feeling like, look, we're Catholics. Our job is to work in the world and keep the church full by having a lot of kids. And as far when it comes to being holy or being educated or having a spiritual life, we have a professional class for that, and we outsource that part of our of reality to this professional class. And these priests, monks, and nuns, they're holy for us. And we just kind of sit out here and feel guilty. And but we just kind of outsource that whole thing to them. And then Vatican II comes along and goes, no, yeah, not so much. No, you're not. That God is calling everyone.
Yeah.
To sainthood.
And that's one of the things that I just think is so exciting is that so many just normal, ordinary people are learning, one, just how to fall in love with Jesus and beginning to share that with other people. And I've just seen a huge impact when somebody does begin to say yes, begin to hear how God is calling their heart in order to be able to serve and care for other people. The thing is that there are not very many systems that are in place in order to be able to help support lay ministers right. So that they can continue to get better, so that they would be able to answer people's questions, so that they could be able to really maximize the good that they're able to do. I know so many wonderful, good-hearted people, And some of them, again, are just doing incredible things to serve the church. Mm-hmm. But we need to start talking about some of the cycles that are not helping us to have people who are excellent at ministry so our parishes can be vibrant, thriving places.
And also, I mean, not even just excellence or experience and professionalism. The other side is that, you know, having a deep, real spiritual life. Have you read the book, The Soul of the Apostle?
Oh, my word. It took me 3 years to read that book. I mean, it's like, I love that
book. The concept, the opening pages of that is that, look, and this is a core concept of the entire book, is that if your ministry, if your apostolate is the word they use, you're the part of the church that kind of goes out and does, you know, if that doesn't flow, if that is from an overflow of kind of like your relationship with God, and you let it, then if you don't have a real vital interior life, then it's not going, you're just a social worker. That's why Pope Francis keeps talking about, if we're just out there feeding the poor for the sake of feeding the poor, and it's not us being present to Christ as Christ, and we're not in this mystical relationship with them through love, in this real kind of being transformed into saints,
yeah,
we're just friggin', you know, social workers.
There is That's a really excellent reason why it took me 3 years to read that book, is because there were so many things in there that I just had to keep putting the book down and thinking about it. Like, there was one phrase in there that said, "What if you were to save 1 million souls, but lose your own?"
Yeah.
and that's some of the difficulties and some of the pressures and struggles that people start finding. And especially because my heart really goes out to people who are those either super hardcore volunteers or people who are professionally devoted their lives to serving in the church.
Well, I think that there needs to be kind of like a, you know, like the Institute for Priestly Formation out in Creighton, I think it is, formed to give diocesan priests kind of a more of a deep spiritual formation than maybe religious priests. So diocesan priests and secular priests being like your normal parish priest. And then there's like religious orders, you know, like Jesuits or Benedictines or Carmelites or Capuchins or something, Capuchins, that they get a different kind of spiritual formation. So they're trying to give to the secular priest, just to the diocesan priest, that formation. I kind of almost think about that as like, what you're doing or what you're trying to do is kind of like, well, yeah, that's great. We're going to let lay people be ministers, but we're going to have to form them, and we're going to have to actually support them and give them an ongoing
spiritual. And let me just give a little bit of a taste on why that would be so important. If somebody wants to step into ministry and do an excellent job at ministry, because young people, for instance, in youth ministry, they're like, oh, hey, young person sitting in the pews, you occasionally show up to mass. We'd love to have you come and do the youth ministry. We think you pray, maybe. It doesn't matter because you can relate to teens. And you get this young person who's thinking, oh, yeah, I could use a part-time job. And they jump in and you're pushed a job description. And the job description says you're supposed to do middle school, high school, and young adult ministry and confirmation. And I've met people who have had to do that on 10 hours a week. And
okay, hold on. So we have 10 seconds before the end of the
Do you know what? When we come back, I would love to tell you what the real job description is.
We'll lead with that. You're listening to The Counterposition. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll be right back with Natalie Scott.
Lynn, how we crave a hanging and it's dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't sting, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, and we are still here with Natalie Scott from the Ezra Project.
Hey.
You're to be commended for not running. Most guests don't make it all the way through the show.
Really?
They just take off running.
I was not told that.
They just run during a break. They're like, this is Bush League. I'm done. If you put this on the air, I'll sue you. And they just run. You know? Not true. All right. So we promised. So we were talking about the people, the movement towards lay ministry in the church.
Yeah.
And then, but not really a commensurate move to taking it seriously and really training people.
Yeah.
And you were about to give us the real definition of lay ministry.
It is the real job description. The real job description.
The fake job description was basically, hey, you seem like you relate to teens pretty well. We see you at church fairly often. Hey, why don't you be the youth minister? Do you pray? I'm not really worried about that. I mean, kind of, sort of.
That might be, you know, I use that as a slight exaggeration, but I have met people who've had very similar situations to that. Oh, you like teenagers? You can do this job. So, but let's look
how
honestly.
How hard can it be? Icebreakers, silly songs, skits.
Yeah, all you do is play with teenagers, right? And so, but honestly, like, just think of your experience perhaps walking into a Catholic parish and walking in and like, what has your experience been with the music? What has your experience been like being welcomed personally? What about excellent homilies? What about going into youth group and having excellent talks and vibrant games or music and like everybody's welcoming you? Like that is not the typical experience for most people who walk into Catholic parishes or even youth groups. But what does it take for a leader to be able to create a thriving environment where people feel welcome and loved? What skill set do you need to be able to implement that? Because the real hidden expectations for somebody who gets into ministry is, and if I can remember all of them, we got, you need to be a theologian, a counselor, a manager, a recruiter. You need to be able to cast vision and be able to implement it. You need to be able to do web development. You need to be a social media activist. You need to be graphic design. You know, you need to be a public speaker. a politician,
craft services,
a saint, you know, like the list literally,
a chef, hospitality,
a caterer. You have to be the maintenance guy, the custodian. Yeah. It goes on and
chauffeur,
on and on and on and on.
Bus driver.
Yes. Oh my word. And I've tried to start writing out the list of things that I know that doing youth ministry myself that I was expected to do that. And it was well over 30 things long that in the real world, these things would be specialties.
Right.
that if you like having a deep knowledge of the theology of the church takes years. It takes years and it takes a lot of education. And
well, there's also this idea that people who are youth only relate to and only will listen to other youth. So we either have to get someone who's only a little older than these people or someone who's been doing this for a while and they kind of still affect this kind of like this kind of this youthful kind of like Peter Pan kind of like mentality so that so they'll take them seriously. But it's like when I was a kid, I used to love to talk to adults and get their take on things and listen to stuff. I just wonder why they think that it's like, we want you to be able to do all this, but you need to have acquired this in the couple years you've been out of high school.
Yeah. No. Like, and
why
that's,
would you do that?
That's where, because young adults, I think I have seen and had, having been a young adult doing ministry myself, I know they can make a huge impact in the lives of teenagers. Yeah. Absolutely. But we need to start talking in the church about what does it take to help somebody not only be competent at the job, but excellent at ministry. And like, what are the things that person needs in order to be happy, healthy, holy, like, whoa, what a surprise. Happy, healthy, holy, and effective, because you need to have a certain educational background, either in theology, pastoral ministry, perhaps counseling, right. Certainly at least that, absolutely. So you need, if you're going to be a spiritual leader, you need to be able to articulate the teachings of the church. Right. And you need to be an excellent manager. Right. But in order to get that education, in order to get that experience, that takes time, that takes money, that takes investing in your people, that takes being mentored. Because I don't know if any of your listeners have got their MBAs or perhaps studied business in college, right. And you're like, oh, this is great. Oh, this is simple. I write a business plan. And then you get into the real world of business, and you realize, wow. This is completely different. I can see where they distilled this right. and taught it in business, but the real messy world of business is a totally different game.
I was just talking about this with a friend last night, how he had a degree in marketing, and we have friends who have done MBAs and stuff, and it's like you think, oh, you're ready to do business. None of them encountered a class that taught you the skills of sales.
Exactly.
Of
exactly.
Selling. Yeah. Just the literally making it about them, understanding what their needs are, evaluating whether or not what you have meets their needs, and then communicating that and then closing that sale.
Exactly.
Which is so core to business.
It is. Yeah.
And no one teaches it.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of analogous to what we're talking about, where here's this one really practical skill that everyone who's in business has to have, and they don't teach it in business school for the most part.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's one of the things with the Ezra Project that we really want to start doing, is that there are excellent resources and programs out right now that I could talk about a dozen of them that I really respect and admire, in which they are helping to either form young people spiritually, they're teaching them the theological knowledge or all these different things that they're doing. But once people get immersed into the parishes, right. they begin to really struggle. And so how can we start building systems to help young, especially young people? I mean, the burnout rate, I call them ministers, is probably super condescending, but that first 5 years of ministry, I loved it. Man, I was so excited. I felt like this was exactly what my heart was created to do. And I just wanted to go out and love Jesus and love people. But it can be so brutal. It can be really brutal.
Let's switch gears a little bit.
Yeah.
So your first 5 years of ministry, did you come up through a youth group? Were you like
no.
a holy roller teenage girl? Like?
Well, yes and no. Yes and no. And
so why does youth ministry mean something to you?
I absolutely.
Mean, did it show up in your life when you needed it, or did it not show up?
Let's back up to me, Natalie, being a little girl and growing up in a conservative Catholic home. And
this is where?
Nevada.
Nevada.
Nevada. Yeah, that Nevada. Nevada girl. I can't comment on that. I haven't lived there for a while, so. But growing up in Nevada, and I just had this love for Jesus. I wanted to be a saint. I was trying to set the world record for saying the most rosaries. Yeah, I was like, really had this. Exactly. But I look back on my life thinking, like, I had this beautiful love for God when I was a kid, and like, where did it go wrong?
Were you like thinking religious life or?
Oh yeah.
You were like going to be the nun.
Yes, go save the world kind of thing. Yeah, absolutely.
So how old are we talking here?
Well, do you know what? It was probably when I was around 11 or 12 that I slowly stopped praying.
Really?
Yeah. But so slowly that I don't even remember. So when you talk about like, was I the good little kid, holy roller kind of thing? Yeah, actually. But it was all on the outside. Like I was the kid who was like getting the straight A's. I was the nerd. I was the super volunteer. I was teaching religious classes, all these things that on the outside.
In high school?
And so all these things. And again, this was one of the things that I didn't realize is because I am smart, because I do get things done and I can make these things happen, but I didn't need to trust God because I had so much of my life going well. And and like, why do you need to pray when you're awesome at everything? That's right. That sounds terrible, but you're that's like, you know, like, I've learned since then I'm not awesome at everything, but still
pray when they need help, and I kind of got this,
you know, exactly.
I don't want to bother God when there's people who need help and I don't, you know.
Do you know what? And that sounds prideful and such. And
but we all go through that in some weird way.
And so that's kind of where I was really starting to come in high school. And I didn't realize, because we talked earlier about interior life, and right. This is something a lot of ministers struggle with too. It's so easy to look good. It's so easy to do all the right things in front of the right people and just say the right things. Right. But what's going on in your heart? What's going on in the inside? Because you might be getting sucked dry, and just like that grace and that peace and that love is seeping so slowly out of your heart you don't even recognize. And that's what happened to me. And I know we're coming up on a break, but how did I realize that? Because honestly, God loved me enough to come in and just like turn my world completely upside down.
Isn't it funny how he'll do that?
You know, I literally felt, when I'll share this story shortly, that I had been smashed in the face with a 2x4. But God just came in and just really he just really wanted me back, and it was very clear
that's good. See, I mean, there's the thing is, you were talking about the prodigal son a while ago, and it seems like that the younger son that took off, I mean, he was a crappy son, but he was a son.
Yeah.
He knew to ask for his half, and he knew to come back.
Yeah.
The older boy that stayed home was good, but he was a good slave.
Yeah.
He just sat there and obeyed.
Yeah.
He just did what he was told because he was told it.
Exactly.
And it didn't, you know.
And he's bitter and resentful and prideful, and that's kind of where I was. I was the older son.
All right. So we're going to leave. We're going to head off to the break with Natalie being bitter and prideful, and we're gonna have a transformation on the other side of the break. I have a funny feeling. So, they're gonna come back to see you get your life back on track. All right, so we'll be back with bratty, prideful teenage Natalie here in a second, and we'll get her back on track.
All right,
so you're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll see you on the other side.
Then all the colored glass, that painter's palette smash. All the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Red Box Media. All right, we're in the final lap, the fourth segment. We're just trucking around the track here, lap four of the mile. I always talk about how when I was in high school, they're like going, here he goes. And I'm always griping about this every time I say the final lap, because when I was in high school, not surprisingly, I was a chunky kid and I did shot put and disc. But our coach thought it was a great idea to make all the shot put and discus throwers have to run the open mile. So here you are at some other school with pretty girls you've never met from another school.
Man,
and you've crushed it with the discus and the shot because you're like a big football player. It's good.
Yeah.
And he's like,
the admiration.
No, you're going to go drag your fat butt around four laps and come in dead last. The skinny guys up front are going to be halfway home by the time you come across. And you're just, any chance you had of chatting up the cute girls from another school
are
just gone.
Gone. I would have been right next to you, though, because I'm a terrible runner.
Well, there you go. See, I'm bitter about it. I'm really on my bucket list. Maybe for episode 300, I'm going to get a couple of coaches from my high school on the show, and I'm going to surprise them and go, why would you do something so cruel as
in that drinking game?
Yeah, the drinking
game. That's
right.
All right, sounds good.
That would be a drinking game with the coaches.
Yeah,
that would be really fun.
Cool.
All right, so when we last left our heroine, Natalie, she was A bratty, prideful.
Well, and here's the thing, though. Catholics,
God has other plans. God was about so to smack much. You in the face.
Well, Catholics just really get accused of this a lot. It's like, it's so easy just to do things on the outside, but right. like, where's that love? And I just lived up to all of that. And so,
you know, that sounds very Protestant. I just, you know, love plan. No, we're just supposed to do. We're just supposed to just do what we're supposed to do. You just wear the schoolgirl outfit. You say the rosary.
Oh my word!
You just do what you're supposed to do.
And that whole worldview of mine was about to be totally shattered, because when I went into college, and you know, because I was not praying, but right. I was doing all these things on the outside.
Where'd you go to school at?
I started off at the University of Nevada, Reno. And
so you went to like secular public school.
Yeah. Well, I considered going to a big Catholic school, but UNR gave me so many scholarships. They practically paid me to go there. So right. I was like, okay, I'll do that. You know? So I went there, and I was in public school, and it was just very lonely, felt very isolated, but eventually just started falling in with the wrong crowd. And not to go too much into details, because I know we don't have much time, but got into a relationship that ended up being very abusive on many different levels. And I just started struggling. And I was like, because I did still have this love for our Lord. And I was like, oh, well, I can just fix this. And so I was trying to fix it, but I was keep getting sucked back. Like, especially right. when you're in an abusive relationship, you can just keep getting sucked back over and over and over again. And I could not, my mind was just boggled that I couldn't control any of this.
Was that your first relationship?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So,
happens a lot of times. You got these.
Yeah.
Kids who haven't been out of they weren't allowed to date in school or yeah. something, or they were like homeschool kids.
There's a huge difference between being naive and being ignorant. And right. Naive and innocent. And I was both, and that naivete really, really hurt me very, very deeply. And so, but a very long story short, and a year and a half of just that struggling. And, I remember it was in December 2005 that I started writing and journaling what ended up being the most powerful prayer of my life. Just saying, Lord, like, I have been stuck in these cycles. I have tried to pull myself out of it. I cannot do it. I have tried everything. I can't do it. If you want me back, you're going to have to bring me back. Yep.
You got to be careful when you pray.
That's
what he wants to hear.
It's such a dangerous idea, like, to pray those kind of things, because those are the prayers he really wants to answer. But he didn't answer it for however many months. And I had totally forgotten about this journal entry. But it was that early-ish spring when I was in Mass and I couldn't receive the Eucharist again, right. because as Catholics, like, if you're in some bad places, if you made really bad choices, like, that is not something that you do. It's an honor. It's a gift.
Well,
if
you haven't gone to confession and
yes,
forgiveness.
Absolutely. And so I was not in a place where I knew that I could receive our Lord in good conscience. And so I was sitting in the pews again, and this was not uncommon. I just wanted to be present. I was trying to be present. I remember watching the priest lift up the host and the Eucharist. And what he says as part of the liturgy, he says, this is my body broken for you. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing those words. And as I heard those words, I just felt sick to my stomach. I just felt so nauseous. And a part of me was like, uh-oh. And started thinking back on some things that had happened. And I run to the store, pick up a pregnancy test, and it's positive.
Oh, my God.
And I wasn't sick. I had morning sickness. Discovered that in the Mass. And that I was 19 years old, and my world was just shattered. I mean, I had this good girl holy roller image, right? But can't maintain that when you're pregnant. And like, do you know what? And I know there's so many girls out there who find themselves in situations where you're smart and you're moving forward in your life, but now your world has been shattered. And I can just deeply relate to that, to the fear, to the shame, to those questions of being like, what am I going to do? And like, even that debate, I mean, like, abortion can be so tempting because the problem goes away.
Right.
And like, when that thought popped into my head, because then I wouldn't have had to tell my parents, I wouldn't have had to do these things, but I loved my baby. Like, and I loved her from that moment. And also too, like, and moving forward in that, and just that was when my grandparents invited me to come out to Iowa, and they, and that's because I was in that abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. They invited me to come to a safe place, and I was there, and that's where I really began to learn how to pray authentically. Pray, because all the good image girl little things that I've been relying right. on didn't exist anymore. And I had to like sit down and start talking to God and just being like, Lord, I am in a situation I can't fix, but I will do my best today. And it'll be like a puzzle piece. Right. And I just trust you'll take that puzzle piece and you'll put it together. Mm-hmm. And my big prayer was like, Lord, if, what am I going to do with my baby girl? And ultimately like, through that months of prayer, I came to the conclusion was like, if he could find a family that would adopt her, then I would give her up for adoption. And he did. He did. And she was born on December 11th, 2006.
Wow.
Most beautiful baby girl in the world. She had this tons of dark hair, really long fingers, and such a precious, precious baby girl. And her name's Sophia. Sophia. And I had 11 days that I was able to spend with her. And,
oh, wow. So yeah. It's been like some serious
birth moms. Right? Yeah. Birth moms, at least in the state of Iowa, usually you can only spend 3 days with them, but I got to spend 11 days because there was some problem with the paperwork. And so, and all, how this ties into lay ministry though, too, is because, when they came to take her away and, I mean, it's not like the movies. They don't have music playing. They don't, it's like, it's very anticlimactic. Right. Literally, they just give you a little hour with the baby, and then they came and took the baby and they buckled her up in a little car seat, and they walked away with her, and that's it. And your baby's gone, and you never know when you'll be able to see her again. And I just broke down screamed, and collapsing on the ground. You know, my family was there, they picked me up, they laid me on the bed, and just and I'm just screaming. I mean, the pain is just so intense. But it was about 10 minutes of that when, and I can't explain this is something that is like so deeply touched my heart, but I felt this peace just mm-hmm. come upon me, this deep sense of peace. And God spoke so deeply and clearly to my heart. He said, you did the right thing and I'm proud of you.
Wow.
And it's really interesting because I feel a lot of sorrow, but that peace has never left. And it gave me the opportunity to ask the question, what do I want to do for the rest of my life? I cannot someday meet that little girl and look her in the eye and tell her that I continued to waste my life. What could I do to devote my life to doing the best thing I can? And that's when I started discovering lay ministry in the church. That's when I started trying to do this. And it's been 10 years now since that happened. And it has been beautiful, but my heart right now really goes out to lay ministers, people who I know also, a lot of them share those traumatic conversion stories where God just comes in and he just like blows your mind away. Like, I shouldn't have that peace. Like, the world tells us all the time that that's not something that even exists. And so,
the scripture says that he is forgiven much, loves much.
Yes, yes.
And it's his goodness that calls us to repentance.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of times, you know, when something like this happens to us, it's that moment where you turn and you go, okay, I want to give my life now.
Yeah.
But that's the only proper response to this.
Absolutely.
Is this radical self-gift.
Yeah. And that's, and do you know what? And such, to make an extremely long story short, why I'm doing what I'm doing today is because I went in to serving in the church as a lay minister with a very broken story, and which a lot of people share similar stories. And it was very difficult to start working for the church because the level of education that you need, the experience that you need. And also too, is that I think Satan's real. I think he's a jerk and he likes to bring up old wounds and old hurts and such.
For sure, yeah.
Most people don't survive working in the church because the job description expectations are so huge and they're not reimbursed well. And so,
so we need to, we're going to wrap this up. So where can people go? Like, is it the Ezra Project?
Yeah, the EzraProject.com. And again, we're just very new, just trying to get off the ground. I'm right now looking for people holier and smarter than me to be able to help pull off some of the things that we want to do. We want to be able to create safe places for young people to come and learn how to do excellent ministry, and to immerse them in a parish, to partner them with mentors so that they can really be able to gain those skills.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Natalie, for coming out. Natalie Scott from the Ezra Project, theezraproject.com. And we're just flat out of time. So let's pull the plug and pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. Thanks for coming out.
Thanks.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.